Right Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It's Tuesday night. It's the 20th of September. September is flying by, and you know what that means. Tomorrow is the first day of autumn.
Oh, that's right. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, good evening, Craig.
Good evening. How are you, Diane?
I'm still fuming about what you and I were talking about before we went on air.
You know, just to fill people in on a little behind-the-scenes stuff, I was telling Diane earlier today that Viero's cell phone towers apparently have some equipment on them, at least here in Nebraska, and it could be other places too. I'm not positive of that. But they have some equipment on them manufactured by the Chinese that apparently can spy on people's telephone conversations, internet conversations, text messages, and so on.
Yeah, and I just keyed in Viero and a couple of sites, and sure enough, and I'm thinking, what is wrong with our government to allow Chinese anything to do with our internet or our cell services or anything? Why are they here? Why are they allowed to be here? But you know what, folks? We're going to give part of this to Friday's conversation.
Yeah, we'll get into that. And, you know, just in case. Hello, Chinese.
Yeah.
I get my internet through Viero, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Nebraska and these other states who use Viero can't find any other serving companies. They have to go to ones that, you know,
well,
connected to China.
Well, we've got all sorts of cell phone companies in the state, except the one that their commercials and the maps are pink. And I don't know which service that is, but if you look at their national map, Nebraska is a big black void. We don't have them, but we have everybody else. And I'm on Viero because we've got a Viero tower right here in my town. I could probably throw a rock between my house and get it at least halfway there.
Well, you know what? If you ever go missing, I'll know what happened to you.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, now when we first moved to this town, we had a different cell service and it was hit and miss. And really the only way I could actually get good reception is if I stood on the porch with one leg over the railing and my fly down. So, you know, we switched and we got much better cell service, you know, because of that. But yeah, this little piece of news just came out late last week, and I haven't been able to get it out of my head. But like Diane said, we're going to be talking about that along with other things come Friday. Now, tonight on the show, Diane, you're covering Who's Really Running the Show.
Yes, and it's somebody I have been saying since the announcement of his running for office was made.
Well, you
it's
and
not
I both.
Anything that suddenly dawned on me. I mean, for years I've been saying, why aren't any of the talking heads in the media saying this? And finally, about 6-7 months ago, Judge Jeanine said it.
Right. You and I have been saying it all along.
Exactly.
You know, but you put it together in an op-ed piece, and you're going to deliver that tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about The Land of Oz, A Cautionary Tale.
Mm-hmm.
So
we have a lot of cautionary tales now, it seems.
We got more cautionary tales than we know what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
Really what it comes down to. But let's start tonight with some quick hitters, because we got a lot of those tonight, mm-hmm. too. I guess we start with the Queen's funeral, which happened all day yesterday.
Yes, and I was watching it from 4 a.m. until the completion. And we'll just make this short and sweet. I watched it because England, whether we like it or not, was our mother country. And there's always going to be ties between America and Britain. And because, simply, it's part of history. Here we have a monarch on the throne that's been there longer than most of us have been alive. Right. She's the only real monarch we have any remote connection to. And I wanted to watch a page of history. And I do have great respect for Queen Elizabeth. She stayed apolitical. She tried to get along with everybody. She tried to do the best she could do for her country. In other words, she was a statist. It was for her Britain first, like for Trump, it's America first. I mean, we had and still have a lot of commonalities with Great Britain. And I was just fascinated by the history of it all.
You know, I tuned in and I tuned out and I tuned in and I tuned out. At one point, I Skyped Diane. And she said, well, I'm watching the funeral and, you know, the procession, and it's almost over. I'll call you right back. And I said, okay. 2.5 hours later, it was still going.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was going to be three processionals. I thought that this one going from Westminster Abbey to the Arch was it, and I didn't realize the whole, you know, bringing of the coffin from the Abbey out to Windsor Castle. And I give the British a lot of credit. I mean, the pageantry and the majesty of it all really was awe-inspiring. And it is historical in nature. And it just fascinated me.
Oh, yeah, I give them a lot of credit, too. They gave her every chance they could think of to get better, and she didn't.
She didn't.
And the fact that they drove that Jaguar hearse at 2 miles an hour for like mm-hmm. two hours, I mean, that was the last-ditch effort, and she didn't get better, so they went ahead and buried her.
Yeah.
Now, I gotta say this. To me, the most fascinating part of it was actually lowering her through the floor.
Well, remember, that's a family crypt.
Well, now you got to know there's people down there, underneath there, because they don't just lower the coffin down and there it sits, you know, because they use the same trap door for everybody that gets buried there. So mm-hmm. that somebody's got to be down there like the pin setters at a bowling alley moving things around.
Well, it's actually a room. You know, we call it a crypt, but it's actually a room. And her father, the king, and her mother, the queen, and then the queen mother and her sister Margaret's ashes, her husband, Prince Philip, and now the queen, they're all there.
It's kind of creepy.
It's kind of creepy, but it's no more creepy than a mausoleum, really,
well,
except that this one is underground. It's still, I look at it as history. She was the longest reigning British monarch ever, 70 years. Only one of the Louis kings, who became king at 5 years old, had a longer rule than she did.
Right.
And really, she was a benevolent queen. She worked as a mechanic. She was a young woman during World War II. She was a hands-on queen. I mean, there was a lot to respect about this woman. And I think the admiration and the show of love that the British people gave to her proved that.
Yeah, they got a day off, you know. but now we got King Upchuck.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other story.
Now I did a little research. Okay. Yeah. There has not been a King Charles since King Charles II. Now Upchuck is King Charles III. So The last King Charles was the king in the mid to late 1600s.
Right.
And I did a little research on him because that was slightly before my time. And
a few years. And
I came to find out that guy was a squirrel. He didn't have any legitimate children. He had a bunch of illegitimate children, but he never had a legitimate child. So when he died, the whole thing passed over to his brother, James II.
Okay.
And James was the last, I think, the last Catholic king England has had.
Before the Anglican.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what I'm hoping is something that I told you this afternoon. You know, Charles has been waiting 70 years to become king. Okay. He's now king, but he's an old man, let's face it. I'm not saying that 73, 74 is necessarily old. He's of his right mind and all that. But he's an older man. And I think the honorable thing for him to do is let him have his coronation early next summer so he goes down in history as King Charles II, whatever. But upon receiving the crown, I think the greatest gift he could give to his mother, to his country, is take the crown off his head and pass it to William.
Well,
let the next generation take over. And I think that would be the greatest gift he could give to his country.
Let's face it, Upchuck is a placeholder.
Yeah.
Okay, because he's not going to be there anywhere near the amount of time.
He could be there 20 years. He could be there 20 years, at which point William will be 60 years old. And while that's not old, it's not like a vibrant 40-year-old who can infuse the monarchy with modernness.
Right, right. You know, so, I mean, but I got to say, in closing on this particular topic, my favorite part of all things that happened yesterday is when they opened fire with a cannon from the lawn of the castle, aimed at the people outside the gate. That was brilliant.
They knew nothing was gonna happen. But you're gonna laugh at what I think my favorite part was.
What?
When Meghan Markle was forced to throw. She had a dress that had a cape on it, and during one of the processionals, her bare arms were showing, and that's very disrespectful to the Queen as far as mourning regulations, rules, whatever go, that she was forced to put the cape over her arms so you only saw like from her elbows down. I mean, here it is, a woman who married into the monarchy. She really should have been in long sleeves. She really should have respected the British traditions, not for her per se, but to honor the Queen.
Well, she's an idiot, so what do you want?
I cannot stand that woman.
Look, we've got real quick hitters we got to talk about.
Yes, we do.
Okay. The Democrats are walking back Joe Biden's claim that COVID is over. Now, Biden was on 60 Minutes, apparently, on Sunday, and you know, he was asked, you know, about the pandemic, and he said, oh, it's over. It's over. Well, apparently, a lot of Democrats, including that little squirrel turd Fauci, they don't think so.
No. Well, you want to know something? actually what Biden said is one of the few things that he said right, because technically with the amount of people getting ill and the amount of people passing from COVID, we have passed the pandemic stage. We're now in the endemic stage.
Right. But that's not what the Democrats are pissed off about. See, the Democrats,
no, they're pissed off that he said it.
Well, they're pissed off because they want to keep those emergency powers in effect that you get from having a national COVID-19 emergency. See, they get emergency powers and they don't want to give that up.
No. Well, you know what Biden did? He also made, while he actually told the truth about that, he actually made a big political mistake, because by saying that, he actually killed his debt relief for college students, because he invoked the fact that we're still undergoing a national emergency, which is one of the reasons he would have been allowed to do what he did. He actually took that away now. So what's going to happen to that? If there's no pandemic, if there's no national emergency, technically that relief for the college students is no more. It should have never been in the first place.
Right.
But right now, it really is no more, if you want to look at the legalities.
Well, that's why the Democrats are so pissed off, and they're running to every available microphone, getting in front of every available camera. No. We're still in a state of emergency. Oh, no, we're still in it, because, you know, the power, the money, you know, that's, you know, by God, if it's over, then they can't give away, you know, $500 billion worth of freebies to college students who got a gender study degree.
Yeah. Well, you know, also, if it's over, you know, it's the end of lining the pockets of certain politicians, too.
That's very true. That's all part of it, you know. So that's really why they're all mad, you know, right now. Yeah. But of course, you know, you if you don't have note cards to give Joe Biden, you don't know what he's going to say. So,
right. You know. But, you know, you got to give him credit in his, you know, fogginess or missing his daily pudding. He actually got it right. The pandemic is over.
Yeah, but I mean, he did it by accident, but still.
Right.
You know.
Right. That's why I said, you know, he probably missed his pudding feeding.
Speaking of Biden and that 60 Minutes interview, he was also asked whether or not he's actually going to run in 2024, and he screwed that up.
Yeah. Yeah, he used word semantics.
Well, which is never a good idea when you're a blathering idiot.
No, because he sort of left it ambiguous. And his wife, who is really, you know, so hungry for the title of First Lady, she must have been like, Joe, what have you done? You're running, you're running, you're running.
Well, you know, he doesn't know. I mean, he says, well, you know, my intention was to run again. And he literally, you know, the guy interviewing him said, well, you know, you're the oldest president in American history. He says, yeah, and I'm in good shape too, right? He's not even sure if he's in good shape. He has to ask a reporter.
Yeah. I mean, the whole Biden presidency is a joke. Unfortunately, it's a joke on we the people, and our country is getting hurt. There's always the option of the 25th Amendment, but God forbid they invoke that, because look at the piece of crap we get if they do invoke that.
Well, yeah. I mean,
and I don't even think the Democrats want that.
Nobody wants her to run. They want Gavin Newsom now.
The man who has destroyed California. Sure, let's elect him so he could finish the job Biden and Obama have started.
It's perfect, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
the setup.
Good Lord. I mean, you got to think about that for a little bit, folks. Biden, he doesn't know. He's not sure if he's running. Nobody's told him whether or not he's running. His handlers haven't put it on a note card yet, so he has no idea. You know, just, what a joke that interview was. That whole interview was a joke. They never asked him about the border. They never asked him about the inflation spike. You know, they just left all that laying there on the table.
Well, he's actually heralding the news on inflation because there was no peak. Well, hello, when Trump was in office, what was inflation, 1.2% or something?
Yeah, 1.4%.
We're now at 8.4%?
Yeah.
I mean, hello, Joe, in case you didn't know, the inflation is getting worse because home sales are getting hit very hard now. The stock market is in terrible shape, but hey, keep saying, oh, it didn't spike. Well, it didn't drastically go down either.
Well, and he had an inflation lawn party about a week ago, week and a half ago, where, you know, he's out there crowing about the great shape the economy's in, you know, and he had that party on the same day the stock market tanked by 1,300 points.
Tell me about it.
I mean,
and by the way, folks, it's again down today over 300 points.
You know, and I'll tell you what, the experts, the economic experts and stock market experts, they're saying that the woke stock market is in for a rude awakening.
Yeah.
So, got that to look forward to.
But folks, the only, you know, advice that the main financial planners are given is just hold on. It always comes back. Just hold on. Don't rush to sell. If you have excess funds, buy. But basically, stay as you are. It will get better.
Eventually.
But how much we investors lose in the meantime might be quite staggering.
Well, you know, we had in our quick hitters tonight, we had a quick hitter on the railroad strike and the threat that still exists. But I want to move past that and go to this other one, because I think this is very interesting. Ron DeSantis has now come out and said where he intends to send the next illegals that he gets his hands on.
Right. Well, let's not get too much into this, because my next week article is on this whole thing about the illegals being shipped by him and Abbott. You got to love our Florida governor. The next place on his list is the sanctuary state of Delaware.
Well, how cute is that?
I'm very cute. God, this man needs to be president.
Well, and did you hear the news this afternoon? A bunch of those illegal aliens that he sent to Martha's Vineyard are now suing him.
Oh, they, first of all, they have no standing here in this country. They're illegals. The very word illegal means you've done something criminal. They have admitted they just walked across the border. Nobody stopped them. I mean, yes, you'll get some liberal lawyers to defend them, but it's going to go nowhere.
Well,
because remember, Ron DeSantis is a JAG lawyer. I think he's smart enough to be able to handle this.
I would think so. But what they're saying is they were tricked. They were tricked. They were told they were being flown to Boston, and they wound up in Martha's Vineyard. Oh, the humanity.
Well, that was just an R&R stop on the way.
Oh, the humanity of it all. My God, they sent him to the hellhole of Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah. And I'm surprised, you know, Obama didn't meet them at the airport with, cheese and crackers and a glass of wine.
Yeah, and a key to the door of his mansion.
Yeah, his $13 million mansion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but yeah, Ron DeSantis, you know he's laughing at this.
Yes.
You know, oh, they sued me today? Well, that's a good one. What's for dinner? Yes. You know, I mean, but they're suing him. They're suing Abbott. They're suing Ducey. They're, you know, all sorts of people. And here's the thing. They're not suing them. Some liberal attorney is suing them.
Right.
I mean, we know that.
Yeah. Yeah. But what's even funny is I cannot stomach that new press secretary, Jean-Pierre. I just cannot stomach that woman. She is the woman, by the way, who claimed that Hillary's loss was due to fraud.
Right.
People right. need to research that, and you'll see I'm right. And here it is. She lambastes Trump and we Trump supporters who believe that that election, that the 2020 election was stolen. But it's okay that she, you know, bloviated during 2016 that Hillary's election was stolen. But here it is. She's saying that all DeSantis is doing is creating political theater for his own betterment, basically.
Right.
And that it's not about getting a solution to the border. Well, here's something funny. Here it is. You have Jean-Pierre say talking about getting a solution. So she's admitting there's a problem. But on the other hand, you have Kamala Harris saying the border is secure. So they don't even talk to their own side.
Well, they can't keep the lies straight.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
True.
You know, and you know, if you were to ask Karine Jean-Pierre, you know, if she would tell you the Hindenburg had a pretty good day when it landed in New Jersey.
Right.
You know.
The spin they put on things is totally unbelievable. But this woman gets up there and lies with a straight face. And she's a total 100% hypocrite. Every time she calls out we Trump supporters, MAGA supporters, America supporters, and she doesn't mention, well, the election was stolen from Hillary.
Right. Yeah, but every major Democrat in D.C. said that.
That's true.
You know, I mean,
Forgets about that. Everybody forgets about that.
Yeah, it's only bad if conservatives think an election was stolen.
Right.
You know, we're talking about people that think Stacey Abrams is actually the governor of Georgia.
That's true. That's true. But let's not just say conservative. Let's say Republicans also, because not all Republicans are conservatives.
No, that's true.
Okay, and that's a misnomer here. I put, for me personally, I'm a Republican with conservative leanings in certain key areas. But I don't consider myself under the banner of conservatives. I consider myself a Republican conservative.
Yeah, I can understand that. I guess I fall into that same category myself.
Yeah, because I'm not a complete conservative. I mean, I'm not a holy roller. What can I say?
Well, but see, I don't think that's really a requirement to be a true conservative. You know, I mean, that falls under the label of Christian conservative, which I think is a misnomer. You know, if you don't want the government involved in your church, keep your church out of the government.
Right. I believe in separation of church and state. So that takes me out of certain areas. But when it comes to national defense, when it comes to America First, when it comes to the economy, when it comes to spending, when it comes to the real important, tangible aspects of America, yeah, I'm a diehard conservative.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
so,
folks,
you know, using the terminology, I should say, conservative for everything, it's not quite right, because there's more people like me out there than the run-of-the-mill conservatives think.
I tend to agree with that, and I'm one of them. You know, I mean, for the most part, I lean conservative. In ways, I'm heavily conservative. And in other ways, I'm kind of politically agnostic.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So, you know. But hey, we've gotten to the bottom of the hour. That means the end of the segment. We have to take a quick break, get a couple of station IDs in. About 30 minutes from now, I'm talking about the Land of Oz, a cautionary tale. But when we come back from this bottom of the hour break and station ID, Diane's got it with Who's Really Running the Show. Stay with us, folks. There's more Right Side Patriots after.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, Tuesday night edition of the show. Welcome to it. If you miss any part of tonight's show, you can always go to rspradio1.com any time of the day or night, starting tomorrow morning. Click the podcast button, and this show will be there along with all the rest.
Yes, it will.
We love Podbean. They handle our podcast for us, and they do a great job, and we love our pod people.
Yes, we do, and thank you for letting our numbers grow every week.
So, Diane, there's something that you and I have been saying for, well, past couple of years, and we've never backed away from it, and it's become more and more evident every day that we're 100% right. And you've decided to take that up in an op-ed for tonight's show, Who's Really Running the Show?
Exactly. Now, let's start by saying last week in my article, Calling for Unity While Spreading Hate, I asked the compound question, why, with the word MAGA simply being an acronym for the words Making America Great Again, why has that solely become the property of we Republicans and conservatives? And why aren't there any Democrats who want America to be great? And this got me to thinking that the answer to both parts of said question can be summed up in but three words, Barack Hussein Obama. And why Obama? Because his racially focused presidency marked the final demise of unity that the events of September 11th brought to our country. Remember how on that most horrific of days, a common enemy united us together as one American people, no hyphens needed, and how we of all skin colors joined hands while crying tears of red, white, and blue. Remember how on that day we put politics aside as we tried to make sense of what was our collective nightmare and grief? Remember American flags proudly flying from sea to shining sea in a show of solidarity, and how at the time the Patriot Act seemed the logical next step in helping to ensure America's future safety. Remember it all, and especially how time itself helped erode away the camaraderie we the people had once felt, as the physical distance between that fateful day and September, while not forgotten, morphed, as most events usually do, into both complacency and a rightful distrust of new government rules that had supposedly been put in place to keep us safe, safe from terrorists, that is. And so with the time, Patriot Act, the very act that once enacted, quote, enhanced the abilities of law enforcement regarding surveillance, money laundering for terrorist financing, and improved intelligence sharing between government agencies, end quote, started to crumble as we realized that not only was said act asking American citizens to give up certain all-important civil rights, like our constitutionally given right to privacy, but was deemed by many to do so, most especially for people of color. How so? Because the act, as written, allowed for the definition of terrorism to be expanded and for law enforcement, including the FBI and DOJ, to use its new authority given in more instances, including in cases of drug enforcement and being able to surveil political activists more closely. Read Black political activists here. And so, in a way, a new generation of Black activism was born from the Patriot Act's then deemed abuse of power, thus allowing certain Black activists who were once considered to be but a fringe element to now become mainstream. And Craig, in said Black fringe, doing so, and note I say fringe and not all Black folks, they were given a voice to basically spread their agenda of hate. White is bad, Black is good, Whitey owes us, pay up, or trouble is on the horizon.
You know, it's always interesting when things like that that come together and the webs that they weave get so tangled up that it's hard to separate one from the other anymore. And as that occurred, you know, you talk about Obama's racist presidency, you talk about, you know, the Patriot Act and you know, what that was doing to the country. What was the natural fallout from that? Because we should have seen it coming, and maybe we did, but because of 9/11, because of all the tension that brought in, how did those two things finally congeal into something so anti-American?
Well, simply, both the unity and the colorblindness seen on 9/11 was now gone, as all things American, according to the newly voiced Black fringe, had an anti-Black racial component and scenario behind it. And in my opinion, this new mindset all came to a head when in March 2012, then-President Barack Hussein Obama uttered 10 simple words: if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. And with those words spoken, not only did Obama give a wink and a nod to groups like BLM, but he helped to reignite all the old racial hatreds, hatreds that had, for the most part, healed over, as he set into motion the downfall of both common sense and the rule of law, that is our Constitution, by his replacing both with a cleverly crafted racial divide. And why? Because no president, in my opinion, has ever hated all that America stands for than the man who refused then and still refuses now to accept his white half, still refuses to accept the fact that he's mixed race, not Black. The great pretender now exposed, not white enough to pass, just dark enough to fool white bleeding heart liberals back in 2008, that a vote for him would help end racism in America. Translation: we should vote for him solely based upon his chosen skin color in order to fix past wrongs. His lack of presidential qualifications be damned. And with Obama's presidency, the media made us out to be a nation mired so deep in both racial hatred and distrust that with time the blame game came full circle to land at we the people's feet. And while we are a nation who no longer seems to be at war with those who are freedom's true enemies, outsiders like those who slam passenger jets into buildings, and those who knowingly enter our country illegally, we have allowed a fool on Obama's orders to declare that we are at war with those we share a common nationality with, a war with ourselves, if you will, a combined political and race war helped to drive forward Obama's fundamental transformation of America, a transformation that goes deeper than mere surface appearance and deeper than any word spewed by the aforementioned fool. Yes, we white MAGA Republicans have indeed been declared the enemy by the fool of a man the puppet master easily controls. But the consequences of such a declaration are as yet untold. For when a nation's politics forces its people to turn upon itself, turn upon its societal norms, morals, values, and ideals, that nation is doomed in the end to fail. Fail while eyes once open to the truth now remain tightly shut. And Craig, that sadly is where we as a country are today, as can be seen by those who try to take the lessons learned and camaraderie shown 21 years ago and twist them to turn the events of January 6th into this generation's political and racial Armageddon.
Well, so how did the Democrats and the liberals, how did they conflate all of these things, these wrongs and wrongs, into something that they could derive power from, and who helped them do that?
Well, let's start by saying, while today's Democrats relish in comparing the two events, no matter that the former has nothing to do with the latter, they prove yet again that lessons once learned can easily be both media and politically manipulated so as to be forgotten. September 11th united our nation and the sum of our people together. January 6th divided us via what has become both a politically motivated, racially driven, and personally targeted agenda against not only one man in particular, but against the sum total of we, white, MAGA Republicans. And so the collective commonalities we once shared have been turned into but compartmentalized, racially driven, spewed out hate. And it all goes back to the Obama presidency and its constant race baiting, America's house deliberately being divided against itself, which culminated with those 10 hateful words that put one skin color paramount above all else. And this, sadly, laid the ground floor for all that has come after. How so? After the Trayvon Martin incident, so-called social justice became more important to Obama and his socialist agenda than both criminal justice and constitutional law. Working with what was malice intended, Obama tried hard to fray the ties that bind us together as Americans, as he willingly chose to rip us apart along racial and party lines. And so race became his ground zero from which all the hateful partisan rhetoric could then emanate from, and which it sadly still does today. And once Obama unlocked Pandora's box of what had been but toned down racial rhetoric, he then started spewing out a liturgy of false claims that America now remains an inherently racist nation with a judicial and law enforcement system that has knowingly been biased against people of color. And when crime rates slowly, albeit steadily, started to rise under what was Obama's pen and phone presidency, he helped shift the blame off black career criminals by making criminals out of those whose job it is to actually enforce our criminal laws. Craig, Obama's laying the foundation for the BLM-initiated Defund the Police movement is what he did as president and was not unlike what the Patriot Act tried to do but ultimately failed in doing as in overstepping the bounds of executive power as laid out in the Constitution.
You know, there's so much interwoven in all of this, and I hope people are really paying attention to this, because it's all true. I mean, everything that you're saying here is true. But it didn't stop there, because this just got worse and worse and worse, to the point, you know, and look, I've said this all along. The liberals, the Democrat Party, they cannot exist without victims, and where they can't find real victims, they'll manufacture them. But it got to the point where white liberals were actually victims of their own whiteness.
Yeah. Well, it started, you know, the fact that now skin color driven foundation was set by Obama, the man who abused both the presidential office itself, along with the powers that office afforded him. And we bore witness to not only racial hatred becoming the accepted one-sided new norm, but to the rewriting of America history to help fit and push forward an agenda designed to transform our nation into one unrecognizable to half of we American citizens. And said transformation was to be more in line with an authoritarian regime than even the left's falsely claimed democracy could ever be. One man to rule over us all, even if said man must at times hide within the shadows. One man who believed his race alone was what denied him his Constitution be damned so craved third term in office. A man forced by Hillary's loss to now have to pull the strings of one who is but a fool, an ever dangerous fool who believes himself to be invincible while our country, both at home and abroad, crashes down around him. But what is now the saddest of all is that it's we the people, the very ones the string-pulled fool took an oath to serve and protect, who have become but collateral damage at best. Simply asked, have we become a nation of such weaklings that we are too afraid to fight back? Have we acquiesced and become too accepting of the one we know is actually running the show? Or does our collective fear of being deemed racist unknowingly, at least on the surface, keep us in line to some degree? For to be deemed a racist translate into others seeing us and treating us as bigoted, hateful, political ideologues, a characterization that plays well into Obama's socialist transforming of our beloved America. So while our beloved America still appears to no longer be safe from either the enemies who live outside our borders, 9/11 proved that, nor from domestic enemies who actually live among us, enemies called not by the fool who recently labeled mega Republicans as a threat to our erroneously stated democracy, but by the man who refused to relinquish the power he craved when his time in office was up. Barack Hussein Obama remains that man, a man who continues to play the race card every chance he gets, and who will stop at nothing to claim what he considers to be his wrongly denied third term in office, even if it means reigniting the now simmering racial color divide. Remember, this is a man who will sell America out for a few rubles or yuan, if that's the Chinese currency, if it helps his fundamental transformation of America reach its final fruition. And let's not forget that fools can easily be thrown aside. Devils in disguise, not so easily done so. Case closed.
You know, like I said, there's a lot of stuff that's woven into this, folks. And if you missed any part of that, really what you want to do is go to either rspradio1.com or Diane's blog, The Patriot Factor, at blogspot.com or .blogspot.com, I should say, and get her link and read this for yourself and hang on to it, because this is one of those that I think is going to come back. I think you're going to, you know, maybe a year down the road, maybe a year and a half, 2 years down the road, you're going to look at this and you're going to go, wow, so much truth, you know?
Yeah.
What's really happening here, Diane, is the liberals are legitimately and purposefully trying to rip the fabric of America to shreds.
Absolutely true. And the thing is, everybody's afraid to say, especially to put in writing, what I just said. Because the man behind it all has always been Obama. There is no question about it. Biden doesn't have the mental capacities to govern the country. And Obama knew that. He knew it. Remember, he wouldn't endorse him at first. That endorsement only came when Joe Biden probably agreed, you know, use your air quotes here, probably agreed that Obama would be his behind-the-scenes advisor.
Well, but even Obama at that point knew how perilous that was because, you know, he said, we'll never underestimate Joe's ability to F things up.
Right.
You know, right. And if you think about it, that's exactly what happened in that weekend interview last weekend on 60 Minutes. Without the note cards, without an earpiece and somebody telling him what to say, he said things that they had to walk back immediately.
Well, I'm actually surprised that CBS didn't black out some of that stuff.
They are
a liberal station.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that they ran it as is without the editing that used to be done quite often.
Let me tell you how some of that works. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I've been media involved for a long time. I'm guessing they did cut a lot of stuff out. They probably pieced what they had together to make an interview segment. And what he said and the stupid things that Biden said in that interview last Sunday were the least stupid things he said during the entire interview. So imagine what the rest of the interview must have been like.
Oh, please. No, I can't imagine. But, you know, the whole point is, I wanted to say what a lot of us are thinking, but have been afraid to publicly say. I have come to the realization that we can no longer be afraid. If we say something, we have to be willing to take the consequences, which I am. We can't be afraid to get the truth out anymore. The time for fear is over. Biden put the final nail in that coffin with his comments about we mega Republicans being the enemy of democracy. Not only the whole thing with us being the enemy, but the fact of him as president keep using the word democracy to describe our republic. If a president doesn't even know what we are, he has no business being president.
Well, but you know, I've brought this up before too. You're giving him too much or too little credit. I'm not really sure which. He knows, and all these liberals know, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. They know that. But see, they don't want people thinking that. They don't want people thinking that, you know, they're intentional. It's not a mistake. It's not an oversight on their part. They're intentionally misleading people to think we are a democracy because a democracy is mob rule.
Exactly. In fact, Thomas Jefferson said a famous quote that's still used today, that democracy is but 51% of the population dictating to the other 49%.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And it's very, very dangerous, folks. And the problem is here. We have now a new generation of children coming up in public schools that have been indoctrinated into thinking that America is a democracy.
Right. And it's incorrect. You know, it's certainly not what we are. Now, do we have elements of democracy? Yeah. But that's not what this country is.
No, no. If the founders and framers had wanted us to be a democracy, they would have made us one. They made us a constitutional representative government.
Right.
And that's what we are. The word democracy is not in the Constitution, folks.
No, and you know, but unfortunately, democracy, the term, the word, however you want to describe it, has become a catch-all, you know, right. and people say democracy like people say Kleenex. It might be a Puffs, but if you ask somebody, it's like, do you have a Kleenex? You know, and nobody says, no, I have Puffs.
Right.
You know, or are you going to run something through the Xerox machine? Well, it might be a Ricoh.
Right.
But you're going to get a Xerox of it, you know.
It's word semantics, but in this case, it's extremely dangerous because democracy is the antithesis of a republic, of a representative republic. I mean, people need to relearn Civics 101.
Yeah.
And our schools need to start teaching the truth about the founding of this country. Here in Florida, we are, because we do not follow Common Core. We do not follow critical race theory or any of that nonsense.
Well, but can I throw something else in the mix here?
Sure.
When these liberals tell us, when they tell us that we're a threat to democracy, right? Mm-hmm. They're actually correct. You know, we MAGA Republicans, we conservatives, we are a threat to democracy because we don't believe in mob rule.
Well, exactly. But they don't realize what they've done by saying that. You know, they've unwoken people on our side who were kind of sleepy and a little complacent there. They voted the right way, but they had no idea why they were doing so.
Right.
And now quite a few have woken up to the fact of, hey, wait a minute. This word democracy is thrown around, you know, like pennies are thrown around.
Yeah, it's kind of foolish. You know,
it's kind of foolish. Yeah.
The more people wake up, the better. And frankly,
and we mean wake up in the good sense, not woke up.
Yeah, we mean wake up, not woke.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's a huge difference there. That's why op-eds like this and so many others that you and I have penned over the years are important to people, because we're cutting through the bullshit. We're cutting through the smoke screen. And we're telling them what it really is. And I'm willing to bet, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm willing to bet you got people, after you put this op-ed out there yesterday, after you published it yesterday, I'll bet you had people commenting in different places, well, you said what I feel.
Yeah, I did. While on my personal blog, The Patriot Factor, I don't allow comments. And there's reasons for that, because hackers tried to get in and there were some making inappropriate, let's say, sexual advances. And that's not what I do this for. But I was getting the responses online, like you say, on Facebook, on MeWe, on other alternate sites. That, oh my God, you said what we've been thinking.
Yeah.
How could you put this in words? Aren't you afraid? No, I'm not afraid.
No, and that's the problem. Too many people are.
Yeah, I really believe the time for our side to be in fear is over. We need to stand up united, not just at the voting booth, which we do, but in the public discourse as well.
Yeah. Wherever the public square is, whether it's a cyber square or whether it's on the sidewalk, you got to stand up and plant your feet and say, no more.
Exactly.
And that's really what it comes down to. Once again, you can get Diane's op-ed either at her blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or you can go to our, rspradio1.com and get the link there, and please share it everywhere you can. Okay, we've made it to the top of the hour. That means we've got one more segment to go. Folks, stay with us. Next up, we're not in Kansas anymore. We're talking about the Land of Oz, a cautionary tale. We'll be back with more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sori at the Patriot Factor, getting you through a Tuesday night edition of the show. And if you miss any part of it, go to rspradio1.com. You can find it if you click the podcast button. We've got that there just for people that miss little bits and pieces of the show, or maybe they couldn't tune in at all and they want to listen to it later.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We let them.
Yes.
We're good that way.
We're very nice.
All right. So I have taken on kind of an interesting thing. It's maybe a little bit more philosophical than a lot of the stuff that I put to paper, but, you know, it's true nonetheless. The Land of Oz, a cautionary tale. And let's be honest, you would have an easier time finding Atlantis or whatever happened to the bits and pieces of whatever it was that crashed near Roswell back in 1947 than you would have of finding the Land of Oz. The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by Frank Baum was a tale of the downfall of the populist movement of the late 1800s. It was a satire regarding the political, economic, and social situations that existed in this country at the dawn of a new century. Oz is the abbreviation for ounce, which happens to be how we measure gold. The yellow brick road was the gold you followed to get whatever it was you desired. To Frank Baum, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz was not a children's fairy tale. It was political satire. And that becomes more than evident when you read from the stage production penned by Baum himself in 1902, in which the Tin Woodsman wonders about his fate should he run out of oil, to which the Scarecrow responds, quote, "You wouldn't be as badly off as John D. Rockefeller. He'd lose $6,000 a minute if that happened," unquote. Another line of thought has been that the cyclone that carried Dorothy to the Land of Oz represents the economic and political upheaval. Now, according to some, the scarecrow represented the American farmer and their troubles at the turn of that century. The Tin Man represented American industry and their struggle to survive international competition, while the Cowardly Lion was a metaphor for our military during the Spanish-American War. Now, I ask you, Diane, do we have a cyclone of political and economic upheaval today? You bet. Are the American farmers having trouble today? Indeed. And how's our industry doing today, stacked up against global competition? How did our military leave Afghanistan?
Well, I find it very interesting, the analogy that you made regarding the Cowardly Lion.
Well, not only that, but the Tin Woodsman, too. Look, when it comes to the Cowardly Lion, you want to think about General Mark Milley, the woke chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who is far more concerned with indoctrinating our military in critical race theory than he is with training them to fight. And is today's Tin Woodsman worried about running out of money, or is he trying to ban oil? Clearly, the Tin Woodsman would not be as bad off if the oil companies were to be banned. Here, you want to thank John Kerry, the United States Special Presidential Envoy for Climate, who jet sets around the world on a private jet, lecturing people on the evils of using fossil fuels. Is today's yellow brick road paved with freebies handed out by the liberal government, and all you need to do to get what you desire is follow that road? And what of the Land of Oz itself? Back then, in 1900, it represented the utopia that everyone was looking for, and all you had to do was stay on the path and do whatever the wizard told you to do. Well, it's no different today. Just stay on the road paved with free money and do what the liberals tell you, or they'll unleash their flying monkeys, the FBI and the IRS agents, to get you. Diane, I suggest to you that the story is as accurate today as it was when it was first published in 1900, and the 1939 movie version could easily be retooled for today's political landscape.
Well, that's exactly true, especially with the comparison you made of the Dorothy who was in the book and the movie to who the Dorothy represents today.
Well, yeah, think about it. Dorothy, the average American, representing what's best about our nation. She had empathy for farmers and ranchers and knew that industry had to overcome global competition in order to make our nation great. Dorothy also knew that in order to have a great nation, our nation needed a bold, confident, and proud military, but all were trapped in a senseless nightmare of political malfeasance. She missed the way things used to be when we were free, self-reliant, and independent. Dorothy and we just want to get back to that place, but there were and are perils that must be navigated along the journey. Today, there's Nancy Pelosi, the Wicked Witch of the West, representing the political elite whose financial interests are above their sense of the people. Then we have those flying monkeys I mentioned a few minutes ago, and the Munchkins, common folks in uncommon times. The Land of Oz, well, that's a representation of the government itself, the power over the people. In the original story, the only way for the people to get what they needed was to follow the yellow brick road to the government and beg the government to care for them. In today's version of the story, that path is being paved with other people's money, gold stolen from the pockets of the common folks. Today's Munchkins, the common people, the middle class, are working two or three jobs to make ends meet so they can live paycheck to paycheck while inflation takes away their life savings, and the Lollipop Guild, which in the original story represented child labor, is digging lithium out of the ground in China, making clothes in India and Indonesia, and setting up shop in other foreign lands to keep from being taxed into oblivion. In the original story, Dorothy faced many dire situations, including that tornado, deadly poppy fields, the Wicked Witch, the flying monkeys, a roaring river, and more. And she used her wits to overcome each obstacle, no matter how dire it seemed in the moment. But she did not do it alone. Diane, it was field mice. Field mice. Perhaps the forgotten Americans today, who helped Dorothy out of the poppy fields. And it was the Munchkins who gave Dorothy the slippers she needed to get back home.
Well, I find the slippers itself, not only the backstory behind the slippers, but I find it very interesting exactly what the slippers actually did represent.
Well, those slippers were a representation of personal financial independence and perhaps the American dream itself. The slippers originally in 1900 were silver, an option to the gold standard, but those were changed to ruby for the 1939 movie to take full effect of Technicolor. Either way, the slippers were an embodiment of opportunity and exceptionalism by which every American can prosper. The Munchkins, they were the everyman and every woman, the American working class, and the backbone of the nation. Perhaps today we should be thinking of them as MAGA Munchkins. In today's version of the story, Dorothy, a representation of what was best about America, could be replaced by the likes of Donald Trump, who's been fighting the swamp since 2016, or Ron DeSantis, who is poised to step up his leadership. Dorothy can also be found in the likes of Jim Jordan or Tim Scott or John Kennedy or Rand Paul and many others, including we the people, who know that the way back home is not along a path paved with other people's money. And those silver slippers that became ruby slippers in 1939, well, those are the votes that we Munchkins must give our true leaders to enable them to fight the good fight. The deadly poppy fields, Diane, are the drug trade today. The roaring river then would be the illegal aliens today. The flying monkeys from the original story are now played by the politicization of our Department of Justice, the FBI, and the IRS, all hell-bent on maintaining the wizard's power.
Well, you know what's sort of interesting about all this is that buried within the original story and buried in your story that you wrote for today's times is that they both shared a certain moral, if you will.
Well, they did. You know, even like you said, this updated version of the story has a moral. We're not likely to notice how fragile our existence is until we're on the verge of losing it, but we can't get back to the safety of home, the prosperity of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness if we just sit around waiting for others to restore what we're losing. We must take action. We must work to get it back and work harder to keep it. For far too long, we have allowed the government to take more and more of our power of the people away from us and exert more and more control over us. But we cannot afford that sort of complacency for one more day. We can't wish it away, and we sure as hell can't pray it away. It's time to get off our knees and do what is necessary to take control of our own destiny. And we can click our heels together all we want, but that's not going to solve our problems. We must engage in the process at every level, and with our votes, we must take our country back from the fraud masquerading as a wizard from behind the curtain. Oh yes, Dorothy, there is a wizard behind the curtain. It's Barack Hussein Obama, and he's not a real wizard at all. He's pulling the strings and moving the dials and adjusting the levers while his puppet gives speeches deriding half of America, condemning those who want to make America great again, and those who dare to pull back the curtain and expose the fraud behind it. Frank Baum did not write a children's fantasy in 1900, and it was way more than a political commentary on the times. What Baum penned was a cautionary tale of what can happen if we, the people, let down our guard and take for granted what is promised to us in the Constitution. Baum knew that the real power is in the people, not the government, and that complacency is all it takes for the government to take over. Let's be honest. You would have an easier time finding Atlantis or whatever happened to the bits and pieces of whatever it was that crashed near Roswell in 1947 than you would have in finding the Land of Oz. Be careful, it doesn't find you.
Well, that last line is very telling because right now it has found half of America.
It has.
Liberal half of America. And it's time that they wake up.
Don't think that did not occur to me when I was putting this together. You know, that's the thing here. If we maintain the level of complacency that we've had over the past 15, almost 20 years, we're on the verge of losing all of it. We're on the verge of losing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, American exceptionalism. You know, and hearkening back to what you wrote in your op-ed and talked and what we talked about in the segment before this tonight, the fabric of America is being shredded. Only we can restore that.
Right, and we have to get over fear. We have to be strong enough to stand united in truth. We can put our petty differences aside for the good of the whole, for the good of the country.
You know,
we mega Republicans, whether people want to admit it or not, we are statists because we put our country first.
America first. That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
You know, I was shocked in a way how many people had no idea that Frank Baum's original story in 1900 was a political piece. You know, I mean, we've become so accustomed to the fact that it's a children's story. It's got, you know, the movie had great songs, the stage production had, you know, some music to it, you know, and it became a family favorite, you know, and singing and dancing and, you know, Technicolor and old, you know, I mean, and when you get right down to it, you know, the first part of that movie was black and white, and then it turned to Technicolor when they got to Oz, you know, and it was meant to wow us and amaze us, and, you know.
But well, you know what, Craig? People didn't even realize there was a book. They took the movie to be The Wizard of Oz without even realizing that there was a written word that came before the movie.
Well, and you think about it, you know, that movie still shows up on television once or twice a year on some cable, you know, channel.
Yeah, it does.
And that thing is 83 years old.
Right.
That movie was made in 1939 from a book written in 1900 and a stage play written 2 years after that. You know,
right.
and people have gotten so used to it being a children's story that they have lost track. Yeah, they lost track that Frank Baum was making a political statement. And
also, Alice in Wonderland is not really a children's story either.
Well, and neither is most of Dr. Seuss's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's political stuff in all of that. And these were people that were writing political satire, you know, at the time, but they're very cautionary tales of what can go wrong. And I was quite frankly surprised. I had several people send me comments on Facebook and stuff, and they said, I'll never watch The Wizard of Oz the same way again. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. people don't realize how many things are actually cautionary tales. Sometimes you got to look between the lines to see the truth.
Well, now in this commentary that I put together for this week, you know, I label the flying monkeys then to the IRS and the FBI now. And one of the reasons I made that particular analogy in this particular commentary was because I'll never forget when I was, I think I was maybe four years old, the first time I saw The Wizard of Oz on television.
Mm-hmm.
And those flying monkeys scared the bejesus out of me. I'm, you know, they did. I mean, I'm 4 years old. And, you know, what do I know? And I'm watching this thing and, you know, it's all kind of interesting, kind of fun, kind of funny, you know, the way the scarecrow danced and all this. Sure. And then all of a sudden you got flying monkeys carrying Dorothy around. And I mean, as a 4 year old kid, that terrified me. All right.
Yeah, well, I could understand that.
You know, well, now, you know, I'm all grown up and the flying monkeys today are trying to do the same thing. The FBI and the IRS, the DOJ, they're targeting us.
Well, because
they're trying to intimidate us.
Well, when you think about it, that all started with the Obama presidency when he weaponized them, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you had Lois Lerner targeting conservatives from the IRS and then destroying the evidence of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you've got the FBI and the DOJ doing the same thing. You know,
yes.
And so, you know, as you look at the original story, and I could have gone into great depth on this because there's so many situations that come up in the movie or in the book that you can draw a direct comparison to what's going on today. And, you know, that's why I say, you know, sometimes the more things change, the more things stay the same.
Well, you know, what would be real nice is if Pelosi could melt away like the Wicked Witch.
Well, and you know, if once we get through this November, she just might, you know, I'm certain we're going to take the House, at which point she will no longer be the Speaker of the House. And I think without that power and without that gavel, she'll probably resign. That is today's equivalent of the House falling on the Wicked Witch of the West and her melting away.
Yeah, or she's going to become the ambassador to Italy. God, poor Italy.
Yeah, what did we ever do to them?
I know.
Or what did they ever do to us? That's the real question. Why would we send her to Italy? But, you know, there's so many things in the original book. And you think about it, that book is now 122 years old. That story was written 122 years ago. And it's still as appropriate today in a political context as it was the day it was written.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a couple of the older books that are like that, you know, with Alice in Wonderland being another one. I mean,
you want to look for political commentary in books that are just standard reading, and most people have lost track of the fact that it is political commentary. Read Gulliver's Travels.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another one.
You know, you know, children's fantasy book, Gulliver's Travels. It's fanciful. It's this, it's that. You got Lilliputians. You know, no, that's very political.
Mm-hmm.
That was very political when it was written, and it still is. So you can do this with so many different well-worn, time-worn stories, you
right.
know, that had a political bent to them when they were written. It's unfortunate that people have lost track that things like Alice in Wonderland, The Wizard of Oz, Dr. Seuss, and so on, were statements about the political times in which they were written.
Well, you know why that's happening is because people don't read books anymore. We read what's on the internet. We read in little paragraphlets, if you want to, you know, make up a word to fit it. We don't read. We don't have the I guess the will to sit there and pick up a book and actually read a tangible book from cover to color. We're on our computers, we're on our phones. We've lost the ability, basically, to have patience enough to get through something like a book. Not everybody, but, you know, well, a good percentage of the population. We read in sound bites, basically.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. More unfortunate is the fact that if you take an American literature course in junior high, high school, or college, they're not going to tell you about Frank Baum writing a political commentary. You might get the idea that it's still as apropos today as it was then. They don't want you to know that.
They don't want you to do that, of course.
You know?
Of course.
So, you know, there it is. Under the title, The Land of Oz, A Cautionary Tale, you can grab the link, and I hope you do, and I hope you share it. A lot of people have over the last day and a half, 2 days, and I hope you'll do that too, folks. Go to my blog, thenationalpatriot.com, or rspradio1.com. Either place, you can get the link. And please do share it everywhere, because like Diane's op-ed today, I think this is going to be one of those. Once you read it, once you understand what The Wizard of Oz was all about to begin with, you'll start to see these correlations popping up in other stories.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I think you'll go back to this maybe, time and time again, and say, wow, look at that, you know.
Yeah. Time will tell.
Time will tell. Well, with that, Diana, I know we're a couple minutes early on getting out of the show, but... You know, we've got research to do. We've
yes.
got stuff to work on, articles to write. You've got Star Trek to watch, and I've got enchiladas to eat for dinner. So,
yeah, so with that, nighty-night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch up with you on Friday. Bye-bye.